order. House Resources on this wonderful Saturday morning. I should just say who's absent. President Seaton, Wilson, Johnson, Newman, Olson, and Edgman.
I know David's here.
Well, he is. No, he's not.
I saw him.
No, he's in the building. I do. Before us today, we're going to take up, under bills previously heard, HB 337, which is the governor's tax incentive bill, for lack of a better term. And so we have with us today Marcia, and we have, I think, Pat Galvin is on the phone, as well as Dan Dickinson of LB&A Consultant. We've heard this bill once very briefly from Commissioner Galvin. Marcia, you want to just kind of play it for me, just so the committee knows?
Sure. Just as a...
Hey, before you do, so the committee knows, we're going to hear this today, work on it. I think there's some amendments that the administration has. I want to make sure that we adhere to our 24-hour rule, so we will have amendments in the office tomorrow, and we will hear this and take public testimony. I don't ever be accused of saying we snuck something through on a Saturday without good public testimony. I want everyone to have plenty of lead time on it so they can have an opportunity to respond. So we'll take public testimony on Monday and hopefully either get it out, vote it out, or vote it down. So that's the intent of the committee, so that everyone knows what we're doing today. And I understand if you need to be gone for a bit, that's okay, so that everyone knows you won't miss anything. Well, you'll miss something, but not. Ms. Davis, would you please put yourself on the record and begin, please?
My name's Marcia Davis. I'm Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. And I'm going to do just a brief overview of the governor's bill, the HB 337. Most of the elements here have already been discussed in great detail in this committee, because a lot of the elements were incorporated in the HB 308 bill. And so there's been a lot of discussion already of the common elements. Essentially, the governor's bill did some key things. The first thing it did was ensure that the department could waive interest in the event that a taxpayer owed interest for failing to pay the full amount of the tax because a regulation had not been in place at the time the taxpayer was endeavoring to pay their tax. And so that's sort of a provision that also got picked up and was discussed, I believe, yesterday. The other key provision is that it enables a taxpayer to, and this is targeted at the taxpayers who are allowed to cash in their credits, because they essentially produce 50,000 or less barrels per day of oil equivalent. And so for that class of taxpayer, they currently, in order to get the monetary value of their credits, have to, one, the credits get spread over 2 years, and that's actually true with all taxpayers, but in order to cash it, they have to demonstrate that they spent in the following year the same amount of money they're seeking to get by way of cash for the credit. So there's a forward funding requirement. And unfortunately, we've learned in retrospect is for a lot of the smaller producers who are doing a single project, once they get to a phase where they've invested a bunch of money in their capital costs, they then go into production and suddenly there's not that extra expenditure of large sums that they can then monetize their credits with. And that's actually the precise time when they need money to basically kick off production. So we found that hitch in our giddy up, so to speak, of how to get infusion into the hands of some of the new entrants.
Marcia, is a dollar for dollar the number? Have you found that that's a sufficient, or is that too much that they have to spend the same amount in the past? If you go from exploration to production, you're not going to spend that money in the production phase. So is that the number that works? Are you fairly sure? Have you looked at it enough?
Good question, Chairman Johnson. And what it is it's not asking them to spend the same amount of capital they previously spent. They just need to spend enough
capital. Can you move your mic a little closer, please?
I will try. I'm as close. I get slapped for my posture. Okay. You're absolutely right. It's not that they have to spend the same amount of capital as they spent before. They just need to spend enough to equate to the amount of credit money they're trying to get back. And so not all new entrants have that problem. Some of them, because of the number of projects they have and the timing of the projects, they can phase it. But it does affect how they phase their money spend, and sometimes might cause them to hold back spending because they need to still have something to spend the following year to cash. So it's a gymnastics, financial gymnastics that they have to do to get through it. And oftentimes that sacrifices maybe the efficiency of the project or, you know, sort of the optimum timing that they would prefer. So what we're finding is we're getting the bang for our buck as far as getting them in and making the investments, and they're staying, and so they want the additional capital to go in. So I'd say it has been a success, but it definitely has constrained some new or further development that they'd like to do. So, you know, if you don't have money, you can't reinvest, frankly. And for them, they're more cash poor in terms of having the capital developed. And especially with the economy going like it is right now, it's harder for them to go out and raise the capital for the advance funding.
Thank you, Marcia. Representative Newman.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Marcia, then, just a couple of points. And I'll just cover them. The department makes the determination on taxes that are owed. You said that there were several issues when you first started your discussion. One, that on taxes that would be owed back or an underpayment of taxes if the rules were changed of whether they have to pay, and that also falls under the department's determination.
That's correct, Chairman Newman.
Representative Newman.
Thank you. And then you'd also mentioned that you can't receive credits unless you spend money. And obviously, we can't owe them money that more credits than what they've had expenditures, I believe.
That's correct.
So if we're, it was interesting that what your comments too about because of the recent downturn in the economy. And is it your opinion, as somebody who works at the Department of Revenue, that you know, it is critical that we make sure we allow the ability to use these in the first year, and also that possibly there's less exploration because of the downturn in the economy?
Chairman Newman, in terms of the, is it easier if they can use them in the first year? Absolutely, because in terms of getting the credit, getting the bang for your buck, obviously having your money flow back sooner gives you more options for your next move as an investor, as a developer. With respect to the downturn in the economy, I'm referring to the global downturn. That's basically where equity money flows. And we've had some interesting conversations with the new companies coming in that aren't publicly traded, where they do go out into the private equity market to generate capital. And certainly that capital is tighter, but as well, that equity market is hungry because they're looking for investments that are beyond the stock market, that are maybe beyond the traditional residential commercial property sector, which have also taken hits. And so they're looking for you know, something that can give them the payout. But they generally are looking at single projects. They're not looking at necessarily going in and saying, okay, we're going to be investing in this company for 20 years like a shareholder would. They're instead saying, okay, they've pitched a particular project to us. We're going to make this type of cash infusion. What will our payout be, and how soon will we have that return of capital? And they balance that against the risk. So it's an interesting sector that is a little different than what we're used to dealing with when you think of the large international corporations, which tend to have the big corporate headquarters that sort of doles out the money globally. It's just a different dynamic.
One follow-up.
Representative Newman.
Thank you. Just on that point, just one more follow-up. And then because, Marcia, because there seems to be, these are transferable credits, and so the ability to sell those on the market right now, the market's flooded with them, and they're just not being purchased up and offered as low as 50 cents on the dollar. So when we look at, you had mentioned earlier, on a one-to-one ratio for expiration or taxes owed, and because they're transferable, the bottom line is right now they're have up to 50% value of what their actual investments were. Is that what you're seeing?
Representative Newman, you're correct that the taxpayers who can't use these credits against their own tax bill are kind of stuck. If they need money faster than the 2 years would allow or the forward investment would allow, they pretty much have to go to the market where you have taxpayers who have tax bills, and those taxpayers may have a lot of their own credits already and may not need them, or two, they simply are not that concerned about it, and if they can buy it at a discount, they will, and that's a smart thing for them to do. So, yeah, we have heard reported, and I think it was in testimony before this committee, one of them said that, you know, they were lucky to get 50 cents on the dollar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
This is probably going to be an odd request, but I'm having a hard time visualizing the form that you're using for this. Is it like 2 pages, 4 pages, 10 pages for the companies to apply for, you know, currently?
Oh, in terms of the form for application?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't personally seen the form. I've seen it on an Excel spreadsheet in terms of the application. So, Dan, you're on the line. Can you describe, have you seen what the application form looks like for the credit?
Yeah, Pat is also
on the line. Representative Olson, I'm sort of bringing it up right now, and I will describe it to you in a moment.
That would be Dan Dickinson.
I believe Dan Stickle may be on the phone.
Oh, Dan Stickle. That I don't have him down.
Oh, you don't?
Dan Stickle is not on the phone.
Okay, Dan Dickinson. I thought he was going to call.
Ask me to follow up and make it clear.
Yeah.
Is this something that we could have emailed to the co-chairs?
Oh, absolutely.
And that way we won't have to take any time.
But I will, Mr. Chairman, I will send this to the co-chairs right now.
Okay, and that's Dan Dickinson again.
Yeah. Dan Dickinson on the phone. Excuse me.
just if we could remember that, Dan, it helps our secretary and keeps me from yelling.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marcia. Anyone else? Go over here. Go ahead, Marcia.
Okay. In terms of, I think we've already mentioned, in addition to
I'm sorry, Representative Seaton, and before you start, Kawasaki and Guttenberg have joined us.
Okay. Representative
Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the credits not availability, you had talked the other day about that folks were winning credits, but because there was a 3-year or 6-year requirement. Mm-hmm. Is that fixed in the governor's bill, or is there some way that we can prioritize the credits for small producers in the bill?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the governor's bill does not make a change in the status quo of the statute of limitations, and that is a 6-year statute of limitations. So that gives we're staffed, and well, we can always use more production, but production auditors, but we are now staffed such that with that 6-year statute of limitations, we put a priority on the credits, and so generally we drop what we're doing and get the credits out the door because we know how critical they are to the infusion of the market in terms of the oil and gas group. So we have been working very hard at making sure we don't have any lags in getting the credits out, and the only time we hit that is when we hit the statute of limitation piece on those audits. So currently, because the PPT and the ACES laws have a 6-year statute of limitations, we won't see those hit us immediately now.
Representative C.
Yeah, follow up. But my understanding was that we had at least one explorer.
Mm-hmm.
That was up against this wall currently, but mm-hmm. if your current law is a 6-year statute of limitations, was this a
yeah.
retroactive change that you were anticipating or something? So I guess,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the question I'm wanting to ask is, do we need to put a section in here that tells the department to prioritize credits for small producers?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the instance I described yesterday is right now unique because we have very few 3-year statute of limitation audits remaining. And so I was basically using that as an example of what would happen across the board if all of the statute of limitations became 3 years. Right now, that is a unique circumstance. It's taking the auditor. The last time I checked, he was going to be through it this week and be able to process the credits early next week. So it won't be, it's a unique and unusual circumstance right now because we have very few, we bump up against very few of the old 3-year statute of limitations right now.
Marcia, which poses the question, if you're bumping up against very few of them, what's the problem with them?
Because right now we're not bumping up against them because we're not looking down the pike at all of the other ones being 3 years. Right now we're assuming they're 6 years and we're okay.
All right. Go ahead.
We've staffed accordingly. I mean, we've been processing credits knowing that we're not hitting a wall.
Go ahead.
Okay. In addition to removing the reinvestment requirement, again, as we've already just discussed with Chairman Newman, the moving, accelerating the credits to be good in 1 year instead of waiting 2 years is contained in the bill. The tax credit is very similar to, it's similar to the to aspects of what was in the bill that you discussed yesterday. It was housed, it is housed in the governor's bill under section 025, which is the exploration credit, and it covered both operating and capital type expenditures associated with exploration, and there was a development section that was being proposed to be added to 025. And so those elements were there. It was had a sunset, that credit amplification for what is essentially infill drilling expires in July of 2016.
Marcia, does that mean that the infill drilling has to be finished by 2016 or begin?
No. Chairman Johnson, it would be the cost incurred. Let me double check the language. Because I believe it's written such that the cost must be incurred after June 1st of 2010 and before July 1st of 2016.
So we're really talking a 5 year, 6 year window that infill drilling will get credits?
So we are
our workovers?
Yes, yes, essentially 5 to 6 years.
Is, and I guess my question is, and maybe we can ask the producers when they're here on Monday, if that's enough time to plan, execute, and spend the money on, I mean, I understand it's a workover, it should be a lot less lead time, but I'm wondering if that will give them enough time, so I'll pose that question to them when it,
yes,
when it comes. And I guess I'd like to, is the administration hard over on the sunset date?
I would have to get back with Commissioner Galvin and
I would like to know that. I just don't know that if it's working, we don't want to, you know, certainly if it's not working, it's there, no one's going to do it. If it is working, then we want to be able to continue it.
It's contained in Section 8, and it's a on the top of page 6 under subsection A, which states that the costs incurred, it must be for exploration or for development well expenditures incurred for work performed after June 30th, 2010 and before July 1st, 2016.
Okay. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. I just want to just flag it as something that makes sure that's appropriate if we need to do it.
Understood.
Thank you. Thank you, Marcia.
And then finally, the bill does make some, give authority to the department to implement some regulations that are going to be retroactive to deal with some of these specific provisions that reach back into the past. And that's the essence of the governor's bill as it stands today.
Representative Seat?
Could we get an explanation of the retroactive procedure?
Not from me.
By retroactive regulations? The retroactive regulations would relate to the waiver of the interest, and that would go back to when ACES, I believe it's the ACES, was passed February 27, 2007. So that way, if there was someone not, because they were basically required to start filing their monthly and their annual under that bill from that point forward, so we'd want to be able to impose the, waive the interest associated with those since there were no regs in place to guide taxpayers. The other provision for which we would have authority to do the retroactive would be the capital credit expenditure area. And finally, under the section that extends the net operating losses and the credits from 2 years to 1 year, that provision is also being made retroactive, I believe, to January 1st, if I'm not mistaken, January 1st, 2010. So again, to the extent regulations are necessary, and those are the three provisions that go back in time, we wanted to make sure the regulations could go back in time and be applicable.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And so the capital credit portion of that retroactivity is simply on the one-year versus two-year application?
Yes.
It doesn't go back and give capital credits?
No. No, the capital credit, the new capital credit, which is the 30% increase and covering infield, would begin, I believe that is effective on July 1st of 2010. Okay. At the start of the next fiscal year.
And Representative Seaton.
And I'm trying to figure out whether July 1st, 2010, again, if we're starting capital credits midway through their tax year, does that really make sense?
I think it was done for purposes of establishing no change to what people felt were the fiscal revenues that were going to flow through, what would that be, fiscal year 2011? And so, or fiscal year 2010. And so I think that was the date, and I'm sure that was probably the reason Chairman Johnson had selected that date for his bill as well. And as far as...
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, as far as regulations, it is helpful to have the regulations be able to be retroactive where the law goes back in time.
Any additional questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, when we heard this bill previously, I asked for an analysis on the fiscal impact and how much this would have made, and then we requested that in writing as well from...
I don't think we received that yet. Marcia, can you see that we get that by Monday?
Yeah, and that's just to make sure I'm very clear on what you're requesting, Representative Seaton, you're asking for a retrospective view of the governor's bill and what these credits would have cost in 2008, 2009 historically.
That's correct, Ms. Berman. And
go ahead, Representative Seaton. Or Representative Newman, you're on that point?
On that point, I believe we looked at some fiscal analysis comparisons in House Bill 308 and in 377, and so it's
the
substantially
same.
The same. So I believe you should probably already have them because they're the same ones in 308.
Representative Newman.
Retroactive or progressivity too.
So. Yeah, Representative Newman, through the chair, what we showed yesterday was just the impact of the progressivity that had no elements of the credits in it. You're right that the credit piece is what is shared in common, and I will say that we are challenged at the department for doing the credit tracking because we don't have a system that tracks things. We have to literally pull returns and do it manually, and because a taxpayer, I mean, essentially because there are fewer taxpayers involved in Cook Inlet, we have certain challenges to make sure that we maintain the integrity and confidentiality of their data. So we will do our best to compile that and do it at a level where we achieve both objectives.
Protect people's confidentiality.
Yeah.
Important as well. Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not asking for a huge in-depth dollar for dollar. What we want to do is have a thumbnail or, you know, back of the envelope, some kind of fairly good estimate of what the fiscal impact is going to be on the state, because it's hard to move forward without having that. But I'm not, for my purposes, I'm not asking for, I mean, you can put confidence ranges or whatever, because I think that's what we were wondering. The other thing that I asked for in that analysis was the check on the interest, what that would do.
And Representative Seaton, because we do not factor interest into our revenue projections or forecasts, it has a zero revenue impact to us because we're not counting on interest as part of any sort of revenue flow. And we really have no way of estimating who has or has not complied with their tax liability. You know, what I could do is try to figure out, maybe go back to some old years. But I'm not sure that they're really indicative of the future or the current.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess what I was just wondering was if we knew whether there had been an amount assessed of interest to date, then that would let us know what the difference between that assessment would be and a change in rate. If there's been none, that's fine, and you could just indicate that.
We'll look into that, Representative Seaton, see if we have any interest assessments, and if we do, we'll bring that back and show you what the delta would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Marsh, also make sure, I think that's probably something that's confidential too, that's
oh, sanitized. Absolutely.
We don't want to run afoul of anyone's confidentiality. Any additional questions for Marsha? Representative Vindberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a kind of a general comment, and I'm sorry for being late. On the nature of the confidentiality and what we have here, I mean, I don't want to know who pays what, but I don't feel comfortable being asked to make a decision on policy when it's shrouded behind confidentiality, whether it's legitimate or not. I mean, I have no trouble going into an executive session to actually look at things, but to being asked to change a structure or a rate or anything along those lines, which is going to change the determination, and being told I can't tell you whether it's working or not is something that's just not acceptable.
Understood, Representative Guttenberg.
Anything else? Marsha, we have an amendment. You want to address that as well?
Yes.
And I will move, and I think we all have it.
We should have it.
Yeah. Debbie, does everybody have the amendment?
And this is, although this was not delivered 24 hours in advance, we will not act on this other than to adopt it, to talk about it until Monday. So I thought everybody had that. I apologize.
Aye.
You will soon.
I have a copy.
No, we have.
Oh, yes. Did we not close this?
It. You might want to check your email.
Yeah, but this morning.
I know, and it. And I know Saturday mornings it's tough to check email and get stuff out. So you did have it. So I will offer. And everyone has it. It's kind of a blank amendment from the administration. And we will also get this over to Ledge Legal to make sure it's drafted in conformity with. So we're going to offer amendment number one. It's a conceptual amendment. And it just has no number at the top, but it's dated 3/27/2010.
I'll object for discussion.
Okay, and I appreciate that. And we will call this conceptual amendment number one so that we can make sure it's drafted properly. I'm sure the attorneys in the administration do a fantastic job, but sometimes they don't conform with our drafting. So a conceptual amendment number one has been moved and objected to by Representative Wilson. Marsha, would you like to go through this, the amendment, please? What
yes.
It does?
Yes, Chairman Johnson. As a result of the work that was done on House Bill 308, in which several of the governor's bill provisions were contained in that bill as well, and then had the benefit of the debate here as well as Ledge Legal's revisions and cleanup, it became clear that there were some ways to improve the governor's bill by coming back and looking at the way that this body dealt with some of the same issues and incorporating some of those refinement and improvements into the governor's bill. What the amendment does in sections 1, 2, 3, and 4 is essentially pick up, actually, and also section 5. The first five sections were cleanups that Ledge Legal was able to do because back when the Department of Revenue's interest statute, which is the 225 section, got split into two parts, the first part for delinquent taxes, the second part for blatant, you know, the scofflaws, so to speak, there were some other provisions contained in the Department of Revenue's area of administration that referenced that 225 back when it was just a single item and failed to go back and specify, now that it was split into two, which of those two parts applied. So section one deals with gaming interest, Section 2 is unclaimed property interest. Section 3 is the main DOR interest provision. I'm going to come back to that here in just a second. Section 4 is the tobacco stamp interest. And Section 5 is the ACES monthly installment interest. Now, coming back to Section 3,
Representative Wilson, go ahead.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I missed what 4 was.
4 is the tobacco stamps.
Oh, what was
interest.
Three? 3 then?
3 is actually the main interest provision, and that's the one that I want to talk about.
Okay.
Section 3 is the provision that the this body did an amendment to, which was to take out the 11% minimum interest and had changed it to a 3% or 3 points above the Federal Reserve rate. The governor's bill didn't address the interest, and in retrospect, we agree with this body that perhaps the 11% is too steep. And so what we're proposing is to pick up out of the House Bill 308 language the change to the interest rate from the Federal Reserve and strike the 11%. But what we're proposing is instead of 3%, we would feel more comfortable with 5%. As we discussed yesterday, currently the 3% above reserve rate makes it about 3.75 today, and we feel that's a little too low to keep the state from not being the banker. So we're proposing to change 337 to address the interest rate as the HB 308 did, and to but make it a 5% point above the Fed Reserve rate.
And March, I certainly appreciate that. I think that was important. I appreciate your consideration on that as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. On Monday, we're going to get alleged legal written version of this.
That is my fondest hope.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Representative Newman.
Just on that point, thank you, Representative Johnson, Mr. Chair. Marcia, just to make sure we're clear on that, then the department makes a determination on delinquency, and those are as you referred to in Section 1, is gaming. It's not. I want to make sure we stay away from gaming terminology.
I'm talking gambling.
No. It actually is the lottery. You're right.
And so we want to make sure that if they feel that the department makes a determination that it was done purposely so that they can receive a beneficial financial interest or mm-hmm. advantage
right.
on the state, that's dealt with in Section 1. That continues to give you that authority. And then Section 3 just changes the rate, again, as a percentage points on back payments due.
Yeah, that's correct, thank Chairman you. Newman. The Section 6 Section 1 would become Section 6, essentially, because we've just added 5 new sections up ahead of it. And this provision that deals with the right to waive, the right of the department to waive the interest where it's appropriate, because of the debate that happened in this body over the last several days regarding the waiver of interest and whose burden of proof it is to determine whether or not a taxpayer did or did not pay the correct amount because of reliance on either the existing law without new regulations and whatnot, informed our judgment to correct the language that we had in this section. And we're proposing in the amendment section on page 2 at line 18 through 25 a change in the language that achieves what this body I think raised, and that is to ensure that the determination of whether interest is going to be waived will be dependent upon 2 points, A and B. A is if the department determines that the producer's underpayment resulted because the regulation was not in effect. That's what's in the current law, essentially. But B, we have reworded to say, and the producer demonstrates that it made a good faith estimate of its tax obligation in light of the regulations then in effect. The way it was written previously, it sort of required the department to prove a negative, to prove a lack of good faith, which was complicated. This makes it very clear that the producer needs to demonstrate their good faith, and that's generally the way most laws are written and the way it seems to resonate better. So that change was made in reaction to some of the debate that happened here in this body. The suggested change at the bottom of 2 and at the top of page 3 were what I consider good suggestions and cleanups that came out of HB 308, which was in the situation where the credit is being given by the state for these infill drilling type things and seismic inside the field, there is existing language that has the taxpayer required to share data with DNR, and that was in the HB 308 yesterday. But they made a more clear reference to F2 rather than just simply F, so we're improving that in the governor's bill to pick up that more precise reference. And what that makes it very clear is that the obligation is simply to give data after the fact, not to go and get pre-approval as you would be required to under the 025 process. The big
change. I'm sorry, Representative, I thought you were.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, Marcia.
Yep. The big change is on page 3, and this is where the governor's credit is being substantially changed in form. The governor's bill had the credit for infill drilling contained in the 025 section, which is the exploration incentive credit section. The bill, as promoted by Chairman Johnson under HB 308, had the credit contained in 023, which is the capital credit section. And after listening to the discussion and some of the testimony by Dan Dickinson, it became clear that it was a little brighter line test of being able to identify what credits, what types of costs or expenses got the credit if we put it in the 023 section. So we're going to change the governor's bill to adopt the structure that was in the HB 308 and make it an 023 credit. The slight changes or the changes that we're still going to maintain for the governor's bill is the governor's bill focused on exploration and development phase. It did not have a production ongoing credit for ongoing operations. In discussions yesterday, it became pretty clear as we talked about what were the kinds of things that would fall under this credit. I would say probably 95 to 98% of them are going to be in that exploration and development phase because we're talking about well workovers, recompletions, things where you've got an ongoing field anyway. And so we're talking about, and this is important to the governor, the idea that you're basically accessing, adding new reserves, protecting new reserves in terms of enhancing their production profile. So,
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, Marcia, I think what I heard you say is by allowing these available for the 023 credits that, and then referring back to a discussion that we had earlier about the inability to actually sell transferable credits, the opportunity to have more options to do this is probably provide more of a benefit to have that fluid working capital that you expressed was a good thing to have.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, Chairman Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anyone else while we're here? Marcia, go ahead, please. Thank you.
The other thing that was modified from the HB 308 version is also not allowing the overhead percentage to be added to the credit. We're very uncomfortable kind of opening that door. None of the other credits have overhead contained in them. It's a small element, frankly. It's 4.5% of the total cost credits, but it keeps our administrative work and it keeps it consistent with the other credits. So, and when I say HB 308, I'm also referring to the Johnson Amendment number 3 that modified that provision, just to be absolutely clear.
We could change the overhead to the rest of the taxes and put that in if it would make it easier for you.
You have to talk to Leslie Legal to find out if it's easier.
A lot easier.
Just throwing bread on the water.
And,
thanks, Marcia.
And as I indicated, there is the sunset provision as part of this credit that Chairman Johnson referenced earlier in our discussion. So there's what's the other interesting thing is by changing to the HB 308 structure, we were able to go from 6 pages of legislative changes down to 1.5 pages, which to me is always a win when you can make it much more simplified and shorter in terms of the number of changes you have to make. Section 11 is the same in the governor's bill, and that's the one that removes the requirement to make reinvestments, and so you won't see it referenced in the amendments. The governor's bill is proposed to be modified by adding also what's on page 5 with a section 12 and section 13, and these are additional interest provisions that Ledge Legal found correct. For recall that section 225 that was broken into two pieces, but we forgot to go back and tell folks how to do that. And that is section 12 deals with the fisheries tax, and section 13 actually deals with the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act interest. The amendment at the bottom of page 5, lines 20 to 21, that's simply a correction in numbering of sections. The change on line 23 to 24 where it says delete all material, this was a provision in the governor's bill that simply had to retitle section 025 to accommodate the interest of the new credit. Since we're no longer doing it in 025, that can be eliminated. And essentially all the remaining edits on page 6 are renumbering, essentially trying to get up to speed on the changes in the section numbers. And that would be the proposed amendment to the governor's bill.
Any questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a number of different interest rates on different taxes and on different, we're talking fisheries tax on section 12 and also I'm going to request that the analysis of the effect of changing the interest rate not only look at production tax, but if we're making these other changes, that we know what that contemplates for these other taxes as well.
Okay, Representative Seaton, we'll certainly look at in those other areas to see how what we're currently collecting as far as delinquent interest and how this would change that collections.
And Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And again, that's a thumbnail. I mean, I'm not asking for specific. There may only be one or two or three of those. The other question I have, since we're talking about fisheries, taxes, and interest, we've got a lawsuit right now that the state has just appealed to the Supreme Court, Carlson case, which is based on interest charges, and I want to see if we can get a AG opinion as to whether there is any effect of our doing this at the time we're appealing that case, whether there's any interaction. I would presume there's not, but since I don't know, I would like to see that.
Representative Steen, I would hope that we don't change any fish taxes in this bill, although I'd like to have 75% government take on fish. If we could do the same thing on fish as we do on
gaming,
then that, you know, it might be worth looking at. But it's not our intention to address fish taxes, and I'd hope we wouldn't change anything. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on those points, I'm not quite sure I understand what the Carlson decision is, and putting too much stuff on you when we're asking you to go back and look at the Carlson decision and how this looks upon fisheries taxes and other. I mean, we're getting to be asking a lot. We've already asked you to give, you know, at least a thumbnail or a fairly good explanation on effects on all the taxes or general fund revenues and I think both oil and gas, is because this is inclusive. We're getting to be quite a workload to have done by Monday. Are you going to be able to do all that?
Well, Representative Newman, we will always do our best. And as far as the credits, we will do our best there. Again, we'll take to heart Representative Seaton's comment that we can do a back of the envelope, and we will do that. And as far as the other interest, I'm not anticipating there to be a large amount of revenue swing in that regard, because frankly, when we've got delinquent taxpayers in some of these other areas, usually it's you know, we're trying to squeeze water out of
Before you do, and with all deference to Representative Seaton, if you have to prioritize like you do with your taxpayers, prioritize the oil stuff first, and then a very small envelope for the fish. Representative
Mr.
Newman.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to make sure we're staying focused
right
on the bill. You know, I mean, we could go down lots of different rabbit trails and look at lots of different things, I guess, if we really requested them and demanded that we have all this information before we do any action on a piece of legislation. But, you know, what we really, I would like to see if we can just stay focused on the contents of the bill, what the bill affects, and I mean, we could, I could ask for lots of references to different taxes on lots of.
Well, it says bears in here, we could probably do game too, huh? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
I do want to go back to.
She's been.
Okay, I just, on the point, I just want to clarify that the request I made is specifically on the amendment and those tax provisions that are contained in the amendment. There's no rabbit trails, it's no extraneous information. We have an amendment before us that actually lists several new interest-bearing procedures, and to ask us to, or to suggest that we go forward without understanding that is not where I want to go, Mr. Chairman.
Duly noted, Representative Seaton. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do also, because it's, I have a question about Section 4, the tobacco stamp part, and.
Where are you?
On page 1. And it goes basically over onto page 2, the top. I just have a question, because I have a constituent that they were out of state because of medical reasons. Both of them smoke like you wouldn't believe, and they've been getting their cigarettes online. And so because of that, there was this big thing, and you had sent letters to them, and they were outside. And when they got back, it wasn't so much that what they owed, but it was the interest that was hellacious. Mm-hmm. Now, is this how much of a difference is it? Because they just...
If they were assessed at the 11%, this would drop it down to 5.75%, so more than half it.
Okay. Now, what about some of these people that it really jumped up? Are you going to adjust anything, or?
Well, actually, the interest is would theoretically drop, so it's actually it's going to be dropping as far as the minimum interest that would be charged. So. That should be seen as a beneficial move, which is, I think, why this body picked up that interest change to begin with.
But Representative Wilson?
It's not retroactive.
And remember rabbit trails. Let's just keep rabbit trails in our vocabulary and game.
Yeah.
Is it retroactive?
I think we've got that one being applicable on a forward basis from the July 1st. Sections 1 through 4. Actually, Section 3, I may have changed that. I think we do, right now under the amendment, it would have that section being effective July 1st, 2010 forward. So it's something for the body to consider.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Amendments due on Monday. Hey, Representative Seaton. Did you have? I thought you wanted to have a question.
Well, I guess I did, because I had a number of constituents that got hit with. They were buying internet tobacco for a long time and not paying any taxes, and so I guess if we do consider that to be retroactive, we'll need to look at a number of things. I hope not.
Don't let the Wascally Wabbits win the committee.
That's right.
Anything else? Is everyone clear on what the amendment does? Are we good on it? And Marsh, I will get with you afterwards to see where this did this come from. Ledge Legal. I heard you reference Ledge Legal, and I think probably you just took some of the language that we'd had previously. So we need to make this conforming, and we'll get this over as quickly as we can. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, are we going to request this as a CS so that we get everything together, or are we going to get it just as an amendment?
Marsha, what is the, it's your bill. We can do it either way.
Might be easier as a CS just for the body to read, because it was certainly hard to get it drafted this way and make it legible.
So, and I'll work with the administration, sir, bill to draft it. If they want a CS or want to fight the amendments, we'll do it the way they want to do it. But it sounds like the CS is the best way to go. I'd prefer that too.
I do too. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? We've got an hour. Any other bills previously heard you guys want to bring up?
That's an inviting question.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair. So I'll make sure that myself and committee members are clear on the direction on this. Is the intent of the chair and the committee to have Ms. Davis available or Commissioner Galvin or whoever we feel we need to explain the differences or where the governor's goals are on this? And we had Commissioner Galvin do a presentation. A lot of that, I think, is already in our packets in where they, you know, when Commissioner Galvin first explained, you know, why he was doing this presentation, it was to show the committee where the governor was on these issues and how the governor felt through looking at recent changes in development in the oil fields in Alaska, how he felt that there may be a need to go back and look at some credits for exploration. And so what we did is Commissioner Galvin, at least the way I remember it, and going back to my notes, is give a presentation pretty much on what the governor's bill did. And then there was a comparison on, or a slight comparison on Representative Johnson. So we've got quite a bit of information that we received from the commissioner 2 or 3 weeks ago when we first noticed this bill and had it in committee. And I think almost the whole session went on with Commissioner Galvin doing his presentation of probably 43 pages. And so we've got a lot of that information in the commissioner, and so hopefully people have had time to look at that and ask the administration and the commissioner and Ms. Davis about what was inclusive in that. And again, I commend Representative Johnson for looking at his bill, the governor's bill. And at the time when we closed that meeting, the discussion was that we will try and put aside all the things that, you know, we had differences on. But there was a lot of good things in both bills that would work towards more job creation in the state of Alaska. And I think that's what we've done. And so we'll continue to advance both of those. But we've got quite a bit of information already. And I guess if we need more additional information on that, we'll go ahead on that. But good information and good work. And I think we'll continue to advance it and even make changes such as what's in the proposed conceptual amendment on how we're going to continue to move forward. I had a very good discussion with the commissioner last night for half hour, 45 minutes, you know, on this, on the changes in the bill and what it does, how it affects the general fund, his opinions on some of this, or he's got his opinions, but just discussions. A very good discussion on it, and thank him for his work on it. So thank you, Pat, for listening. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Well, we'll do this on Monday. We have heard this a lot. We're not, we're going back to the basics, I think, and we will try to get something out on Monday. Or not, but we will. I would like to vote on it on Monday, have public testimony, and get it out as quickly as we can to move it up on its merry way to finance. Representative Seed.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, you wanted amendments by electronic means by when?
If we could get them tomorrow so that we could have them at least categorized so that we could get them early Monday over to Les Legal. To make sure, you know, and if you can get them done through Ledge Legal as is, that's great. If we get them tomorrow, that'd be good. We'll be flexible. You know, I don't know what the amendments are going to be. If it's tobacco tax, I'll be a little flexible on this one since we're trying to get it through. If you get it to me first thing Monday morning, I won't be. But if you can get it to me tomorrow, it'd be greatly appreciated. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, if members are contemplating amendments, it would sure be nice or easier for me anyhow. You know, Ledge Legal, if tomorrow's Sunday, if we're getting those Monday, it's kind of difficult to do that. And so
sooner
it's nice
better
for me if members are contemplating amendments that they at least talk to other members of the committee and say, you know, here's what I'm thinking about. And we've asked that from day one. You know, you may not have the paperwork done and the legal things done, but it sure is nice if you communicate with other members what your intent is, you know. I'm assuming amendments and working in this direction. Here's kind of what I want to change. The legal people will work out all the legal terminology and make it fit into statute form, but the concept will be changed. And so if we could at least get an idea of the concept.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we had, at our earlier discussion, I discussed two things. One was on making the credits more more transferable, more saleable.
And you're talking about having the arm board or something?
The arm board, so that has already been drafted. It would have to be placed correctly.
Conformed.
And the other thing was to look at the amount of tax credit on the infield versus versus the exploration tax credits, and whether we are going to be providing any different incentive if we have exactly the same tax rate on the infield work versus exploration, where we had risk of development or risk of finding a field, you know, reservoir risk or really not the reservoir risk. And so that might be, but that's just going to be a number.
And I appreciate that. And I encourage you to also look at that in another way, Representative Seaton, before we adjourn, is guaranteed flow down the pipeline versus risky flow down the pipeline, and that's revenue to the state. So there's an advantage to doing the infield credits because it's more of a guaranteed revenue to the state. So with that, anything else? Representative Newman. I'm trying to get out of here.
I mean, yeah. But I want to make sure that I'm clear on this, too.
But we're not going to sacrifice
that. I think what the, and I certainly agree with trying to make the opportunity to sell exploration credits beyond just three companies. It's currently only three companies pretty much can buy them, and they already have their own, so they're not buying them. And to be able to expand those opportunities, arm board, whoever wants to buy them, I think is a good idea, you know, at first blush. And secondly, if we're going to be looking at well workover, you know, I think is what we're talking about, infield credits, you know, for reworking these wells, that is what is keeping throughput at the, you know, right now throughput is dropping. But if it wasn't for the opportunity to have well recovers right now, well remakes and workovers right now, we would really be in trouble. And because of new opportunities for technology, that's what's keeping us afloat, literally, in this state. And if, you know, I certainly hope there isn't an attempt to try and make it so that any credits that are put forward to provide for workovers, boy, the advantages to the state, because we've got throughput at TAPS, is pretty high. And if we didn't allow or try and do what we can to continue that, I have some pretty big concerns on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And that was kind of my point about the risk versus reward. Commissioner Galvin, I hope you haven't dozed off on us. Did you have anything to add before we adjourn today?
No, Mr. Chairman. I think we're heading in the right direction, and I look forward to speaking to the committee on Monday.
Thank you. Marcia, before we go, I'm sorry. Yeah. Pat, will you be here on Monday? Are you in town?
Yes, I'll be there in Juneau.
Thank you. We had a question about, I think, the arm board. And so, Paul, Representative Seaton, if you could coordinate to make sure that there's somebody with my committee who you'd like to have address that, to see if their willingness to take that on, if you'd coordinate with staff for Monday so we could maybe have somebody online. Just to let us know who you think would be the person. I don't know that I know anybody over there, or maybe Marcia could do it in terms of being Department of Revenue.
I'm thinking Commissioner Galvin would probably be
okay.
Pretty capable.
Okay, okay.
And Mr. Chairman, the Commissioner of Revenue sits on the Arm Board. We have a letter from the Arm Board from the previous amendment that, you know, supported the position, as well as from the small producers supporting that position as well. So
okay. I'd like to make sure that that is available to the committee, and if staff doesn't have it, they may be coming over to you to see where that lives, so that we can have it. I'd like for everybody to have it in front of them. Is my point, Governor? Mr. Governor,
just yeah. Question? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment about the tone. This would be a different tone pre and post skits.
Representative Gunberg, I seriously thought this morning of coming in here and adjourning to a call of the chair and doing it at 8, so we would not have to subject ourselves to the skits. But I thought better of that, because it gives them plenty of time now to incorporate this into the skits. With that, if there's nothing else to come, what's being passed out now for the record is the request of Representative Olson, the application for the tax credits. It was provided by our able consultant, Dan Dickinson. With that, everyone, go shoot straight. hit the ball straight, and remember, it's all in good fun this evening. With that, we're adjourned.